So move. The DE1 amendment is to get it in the form the author wishes to present it. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, oh, we probably don't, sorry, but other, we don't have a quorum yet.
No.
We'll have to wait.
Okay.
Sorry.
Right.
Withdraw that.
Right.
Please, welcome to the committee, and are you presenting or are you testifying?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. We do have Craig Clark here from the City of Worthington to explain the need for this bill, so I can turn it over to Craig.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Campbell Soup property, I've had the page handout from progression of the Campbell Soup property, closed operations in 1997 in downtown Worthington, and after the failure of another company trying to take it over, the city obtained ownership in 2005. The legislature approved an $800,000 grant in 2006 for remediation and demolition of the property. The city has identified a public purpose as a new fire station, but we've also been looking at co-locating a senior center. We're working with the county to add a library facility for the future public purpose. It's our understanding the grant provisions require the public purpose to be completed by December 31st, 2010, and with the uncertainty of local government aid, considerations of other alternatives and economic times, the city is wrestling with the timing of this legislation's place to have the project completed. We'd like language added to provide a little flexibility and allow for the project to be, the funds be available until extended. We'd highlight that this is at no cost to the state, and we'd ask for the flexibility of the city to deal with these budgetary constraints at this time.
And what was it, the date in 2010?
December 31st.
Of 2010.
Yes.
And members, just for background, what normally would happen is with all bonding authorization, at the beginning of a year, we get a bond cancellation report. And any bond issues that have reached that time frame are on a cancellation list, but we get advance notice of it, and it says something to the effect, these will be canceled unless the legislature takes action. And they give it to us, I'm looking to my researcher just to make sure I'm explaining this correctly. They give that to us in enough time that we can check with all those projects. Very often it's unexpended dollars. For example, the University of Minnesota has a small amount of money left over from a project, and they say to us, yes, we're finished with that project, and those bonds can be canceled. In a case like yours, we would come to you and say, did you intend for these to cancel? And you would say, no, here's the situation. And then we would, in fact, take action to reauthorize or extend what... So we have a process in law for this. And so what I was just trying to understand is there a time frame where that the process that what we would follow for all of these wouldn't work for you? That's sort of what I'm trying to figure out here.
You want to comment on that?
Well, Madam Chair, it's just the we're trying to iron some things out with the county for the library facilities and some of those things as they move forward. But the timing is going to be a kind of an undue hardship at this time. So,
and I guess I would look to staff for do we often anticipate the deadline and preemptively extend, or do we usually wait for that year in which we're informed of the cancellation before we take action?
Madam Chair, I think it's happened where in the past where we've preemptively put in language to either put in a date specific, you know, extending it by a couple of years, or by I don't know that we've actually just said that 16A.642 doesn't apply.
Mm-hmm.
It's a report that comes at the beginning of the biennium in the odd-numbered year, and effectively, once that report is issued, funds are frozen for that project, and because the agencies wouldn't know if the legislature is going to reauthorize it, so that come January 1st, if somebody shows up on the cancellation report until the legislature actually goes ahead and enacts a law that signed or a bill signed into law reauthorizing the money or making a new appropriation, the agency is not going to release the money to the to the community or to the agency that's on the cancellation report, so that doing it in advance gives them sort of a continuity. But you know, it has happened different ways.
Okay. And the reason, Mr. Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do want to make clear that the remediation, we've expended a lot of money and resources to take down the facility. So it's, right now it's currently bare ground. The only thing that we would remain to be done with any of the remaining funds of the $800,000 would be further remediation. And in order to do that, we really have to have the what the public purpose is going to be. You don't remediate to the full extent until you know what the project's going to be. So that's what we're trying to bring down to the final decisions and that sort of thing. So I do want to make clear that we have the sites, the bare site, at least as far as any structures are concerned. So we have put a lot of resources in trying to address that concern.
And I don't mean that any of us disagree with the project, but and the thing I think that we would be careful about, normally we would never want to put this kind of language on every project. These funds are available until expended, because all of that bonding authority would be tied up, and we wouldn't be in a situation where we could ever do anything about it, because that was the nature of how it had been passed. So it's language that I mean, obviously, you can do whatever you want on any project, but you don't also want to set a precedent. Representative Silver.
Well, there's another question that we need to have answered besides that question today. I think you're absolutely right. And that is, do you have if you don't have a plan for the land, and if we use bonding money to remediate the land, is there some restrictions then on what the disposition of that land can be? I mean, could you then use it for a private purpose, or for a private person to buy the land?
Madam Chair?
It's Representative Hamilton.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Solberg. We cannot use that for a private purpose. It is intended for a public purpose, and we had the plan developed and everything, like was stated earlier, with the fire hall, et cetera, that they were going to do that. Because of the downturn, because of the financial instability, it made the project questionable on whether or not we're going to be able to have all the funds secured and complete that project for that public purpose before the 2010 deadline. That's our concern.
Well, I'm sure then, I think at the very least, you'd have to change the Amendment 2 to a state-specific that would be an extension for a reasonable time.
And what we do have a quorum now, and so we're going to vote on your amendment to get it in the form you desire. And we have time, because we hold all these bills over, and we'll explore the issue with you and with finance about date specific, or with research staff.
Okay.
So members, we had moved House File 931, and then I am moving the DE1 amendment. That is an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion carries. That bill is as it is in the Senate now, as I understand it.
Yeah.
And what we'll do is try to get an answer to the question that Representative Solberg raised.
Okay.
Should we have a... We'll consult with you and with finance and...
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Do we have any other questions on this bill? Representative Leader.
I was just curious. I see it remediate contaminated soil. Normally, PCA funds that, don't they? I was wondering if they had some PCA funding, or how come...
This is that redevelopment account under the deed portion of the bill. So it's Representative Mahoney's here. pardon me?
Oh, sorry, Madam Chair. Is this the remediation or the brownfields account in deed?
Well, this is, I think, neither of those, Representative Mahoney. Is this the redevelopment account under deed? But they are certainly for a particular purpose, but Representative Mahoney, can you help us with
Madam Chair, I haven't had enough time to actually look at it, but the redevelopment account is primarily used for business development, I'm not sure, is this a sewer and water facility, or I'm not sure what facility it is. So, but if it's redeveloping a business site, the redevelopment account would be indeed, yes.
Representative Mullery.
Well, Madam Chair, the redevelopment is the one that the brownfields actually is the pollution. The redevelopment covers clearing out building debris, everything like that. Doesn't have to have pollution in it.
Ms. Dyson.
Madam Chair, under the statute for the redevelopment program, redevelopment costs are costs of land acquisition, stabilizing unstable soils when infill is required, demolition, infrastructure improvements, ponding or other environmental infrastructure, and costs necessary for adaptive reuse of buildings, including remedial activities.
And so I think our only question here is, do we have to have a date? And we'll consult with Representative Hamilton and staff.
Okay, but thank you, Madam.
No further questions. Thank you very much. Well, this bill will be held
thank
over.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you.
Representative Morrow, we don't have this bill before us, but just given our time frame and that next week we're receiving some recommendations, I think this is in Representative Khan's city right now. I think it relates somewhat to the department bill that talked about public and private sales, so it seemed to me to be a helpful bill. We can't move the bill or the amendment, but please describe both the bill and the amendment for us. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. Madam Chair, members, this is the Minnesota First Bond Sale. The idea behind this came from some construction companies and some labor unions in my area in Mankato who asked about the ability to buy bonds directly from the state of Minnesota to invest in Minnesota projects. So both looking at that and looking at the history behind war bonds grew this idea, trying to make bonds available, trying to make a relatively straightforward purchasing process so that whether pension plans or individuals wanted to invest in Minnesota projects, they'd be able to do so. I do have an amendment. I'm not going to obviously move the amendment, but just so the members know, Assistant Commissioner Cardell and I have met. I'll turn to Assistant Commissioner Cardell in a moment, but the amendment would change, not limited to zero coupon bonds, and also would increase the minimum denomination from $500 to $1,000. That's because at $500, the fees would cancel out any kind of benefit of actually buying the bond. But at that point, I'll turn to Assistant Commissioner Cardell.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Morrow. I really appreciated the opportunity to talk with him. He initiated that conversation, by the way, which I was also very happy about this program, because it really does mesh quite nicely with the agency bill that we testified on earlier this week. We talked about my impetus or my incentive, which was to try to create a way to get Minnesota bonds to more Minnesota potential Minnesota bond holders in the state here. You know, we cannot directly sell securities. The state of Minnesota is not going to be able to just sell bonds. You need to be a registered broker-dealer firm subject to all of the securities regulations. But there are, in most states, as we talked about on Tuesday afternoon, a little bit, I think, there are programs that most states that can sell their bonds by negotiated sale have implemented to do this very thing. As Representative Morrow indicated, we talked about the original bill, which proposed zero coupon, or what we also call capital appreciation bonds, as the required form of the security. In the current market, again, two problems. Number one, it's not desired by investors, so limiting it to that could certainly be problematic, at least in the near term. Secondly, zero coupon bonds are also more expensive from an interest rate perspective. And in fact, if you have had a chance to see the fiscal note, it's about, we did a hypothetical analysis of a $25 million, what we call current interest bond issue, which is what the state typically sells, versus zero coupon bond, and the difference in annual debt service was about $100,000 a year. So it's not inconsequential. And also, as Representative Morrow pointed out, the the very small size of the denomination, while individuals might love that, in order to purchase bonds, they will have to have a brokerage account of some sort with a financial institution. And there will likely be fees attached with that. And I had talked to Representative Morrow earlier. I had surveyed, not exhaustively, but my colleagues around the states that have done this, and I had several people respond back to say that very small denominations were problematic because of fees on the account.
Representative Carlson has a question.
Madam Chair, first of all, I like this idea, but one time I carried a bill into law called the Gopher State Savings Fund and created families to save their own. Got a lot of resistance from Peter Felton. We fight out against it. We finally had a meeting with him and the Minister of Finance, and I called him away in Simonon. And the breakthrough at the time to get a bit of a confession from the department was when I reminded Representative Seminole that when he was in the legislature, he was going to co-author the bill with him. And he looked at Peter and said, I think we can make this work. But I don't think any were ever told. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially my question. You know, it's one thing to get it into law, and another thing to get enough cooperation, if you will, out of the department so that there would actually have been some. I don't think it was ever even an attempt. So if you could tell me why the change in philosophy in the department, apparently, and I know there's new leadership, and what you think the likelihood that it is, and if you'd actually go to market with the thing that we have to strong resistance from that.
Ms. Cardella or Representative Morrow?
Well, this is history that predates me, so I may comment.
I think it's for the department is my,
okay.
My comment. As I point out, Madam Chair, I do like the concept, but why the change in the attitude of the department? Do you think you can actually sell them, and will you actually try to go to market with them?
Ms. Cardell.
Yes. Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, well, I'm not Peter Southson, first of all. And you know, I mean, I don't want to... Peter was fundamentally against selling bonds through any method other than a competitive sale method. And using a competitive sale is not going to facilitate this type of a program. I believe that he believed that it was more expensive, and in fact, a zero-coupon bond issue would be more expensive than a traditional current interest bond. My philosophy is that this is marketable, that in the market environment that individuals are very interested. In fact, when I met with Representative Morrow, I think it was just on Monday, I mean, ironically, I had a call right before I was scheduled to go to his meeting from a gentleman in the state here who wanted to know how he could buy state of Minnesota GO bonds because he doesn't know how to do it. He can't find out how to do it. And I said, wow, how ironic that you're calling me today, because we have a bill before us and we have an initiative to try to make these easier for individuals to buy. But I will tell you that we will not be doing this because we think we're going to save money, because you have to be able to market these bonds and you have to be willing to sell them in smaller denominations so that people can buy them. But we will be doing it because, in my view, that it is important that people in Minnesota have a chance to invest in infrastructure of this state. And our practices today do not allow us to do that.
Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, just to go back and do a little history then, I think that's still the law. We go for state bonds. With the change in administration and viewpoint, will you attempt to market those? And the reason I ask that question, Madam Chair, is that when I carried that legislation, there was a fair amount of statewide publicity because of the opportunity to save college. And I would get calls, just like you did earlier this week, how do we do it? And I would tell them to get in contact with the department because they become law. And it's just, like I say, never happened. So there is interest. And I'm sure there will be interest in these funds as well. Will you be attempting to market the Gopher State funds as well?
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, I will confess that I talked only very briefly with Ms. Dyson on the Gopher State issue. I'm not familiar off the top of my head with all the particulars of that, if it was again, zero coupon bonds, if it was very small denominations. If it is that, then we might want to amend that to make it a, perhaps a more marketable security in the current environment.
Now, Madam Chair, we were at the time very open to adjust it in whatever way would work for those departments.
Thank
you.
Yeah, I will.
And Madam Chair, you're right, Representative Kaufman. Ms. Dyson and I did talk about the Gopher State Bond example. The one other change that may, and I don't know when the Gopher State Bond program began, we talked about the marketing, we talked about the use of web sales and the like. I don't know if those tools are available, but we did talk about the importance of having to market these bonds and the cost that would be associated with marketing them as well and being willing to expend those costs.
Madam Chair, everyone that's also Representative Carlson, you know, back, I think those bonds might have been authorized in 97 or something along those lines.
During the Carlson administration.
Yeah, and so for the tools that we have today through the web, we're really not tools for selling municipal bonds as they are today. We've done some very informal discussions with our own IT staff to talk about, you know, how we could create a website or a link to a website that does not have to be complex, to direct people to presumably a number of firms that would be able to offer these bonds. People could choose. They're not going to be directed to one particular firm. And also there is, as Representative Moore, you have to advertise. And that means you have to advertise in print, and you probably have to advertise over radio. Which is where there is a cost. Those costs with an initial sale would be able to be paid from our bond sale expenses appropriation. So as long as we don't go crazy with that aspect of it, you know, I think that's certainly manageable within the context of those amounts.
Just out of curiosity, Representative Solberg isn't here right now, but in the last 2 years, given the current state of people wondering where do they put their money, he was contacted by a credit union in his district saying, we have this money to invest. Where can we go with it? I see this as individuals.
Normally, Madam Chair, these programs are directed to individuals. Credit unions are always able to purchase municipal bonds, but we would not do it in a way. I mean, I'm assuming they probably don't want to buy a $1,000 bond. They probably have more money to invest in that, so they're not precluded from buying it. But of course, they may not be knowledgeable about how to go about it. Just as the gentleman that called me on Monday, who's just an individual, is not. So that would be, you know, someday. One of my long-term objectives is to try to have a better outreach than the state has had historically to all types of investors, both individuals as well as institutions, whether they're large or small, like the credit union.
I don't see any other questions. Closing comments.
No, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I understand that we will be getting a hearing in Representative Collins' committee, and then we may be back.
And there is a fiscal note, by the way, in your packet for this bill. Representative Anderson has a question.
Madam Chair, this is going to be passed on to another committee then? Or
it's what? Not even in our possession.
Oh.
We didn't move it today.
Mm-hmm.
It's in Representative Kahn's committee.
Mm-hmm.
But because it relates somewhat to a department's bill, and we don't know what our time frame is going to be in the next couple of weeks, I wanted at least to have a chance to discuss the concepts here. So it is... it is not before us for action.
Madam Chair, Ms. Dyson, the bonds that Representative Carlson were talking about, are they similar to this in concept?
Ms. Dyson.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, yes. Actually, if you compare the language, it's almost identical.
So we could just as well sell Gopher State bonds or whatever that Mr. Representative Carlson has?
The statute authorizing Gopher State bonds is still there. So whether or not it's, as they've been discussing, whether or not the current language matches what is needed to be able to do it, I think, you know, the department would want to look at the language to see how it works technically from a bond sale point of view, but the authorization is still there.
Well, Madam Chair, Ms. Dyson, it sounds like it's redundant. As far as the same language, basically the same concept.
Go ahead.
Looks like one of you wanted to.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I think we're both asking ourselves, and maybe Representative Carlson can speak to this, what the purpose of the bonds were as well. I think you were saying that they were educational.
Representative Carlson, they were targeted to people who were perhaps funding a college savings account for a child, whereas I think the concept of what Representative Morrow has is broader, where we would not be doing zero coupon bonds with a value that accretes, but rather a current interest, that is the current market type of structure that any person in the state, whether it's an individual, whether or not they're funding a college fund for their kids or... I mean, that was the purpose, right, Representative Carlson? Representative Carlson.
But I think just putting on a little bit, part of that whole concept was that a grandma, grandpa, aunt, uncle,
yes.
You know, if,
right.
could purchase those bonds, like some people do a U.S. savings bond, if you will, for a son, daughter, grandson, or mm-hmm. granddaughter kind of thing. So that we were trying to get people to begin to look ahead and begin to save for college was the underlying concept. And there was some discussion at the time whether that was a good investment or not, and we finally decided that that was up to the potential purchaser to decide if there were other better investments available or not, because that was part of the debate at the time.
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This just broadens the scope, and you can use it for education or anything. Thank you.
Any closing comments?
No. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, committee members.
And next on the agenda, we have Representative Hausman with House File 827. Representative Hausman, to your bill. And,
Madam Chair, I will move House File 827. And as in all of these, we have different kinds of amendments floating back and forth between the House and the Senate. But for the purposes of discussion today, I'm going to move the DE2 amendment to be clear that today we're only talking about a narrow issue. So I'm moving the DE2 amendment. To get the issue before us.
So Representative Hausman moves the DE2 amendment to get the bill in the shape to which she would like to have it today for discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
And Madam Chair, this issue has been before us really for a couple of years. And I can remember this committee and the three people I recall commenting on it at the time were Representative Dunkey, Representative Mahoney, and Representative Lanning. In the context of other kinds of projects that some municipalities have done. And I'm told that we can tell a Ramsey County story, but I'm told there are a number of other libraries who, 100 other situations like this. So we're going to discuss an issue briefly today. I think the Senate has actually moved this, but I do believe the issue of language is still a little unclear. So to get the issue before us, we've asked Ms. Dyson to give you a little tutorial.
Very good. Ms. Dyson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Actually, I'll start from the bill summary, basically, that what this bill is doing is providing that if a library, a public library, obviously, was improved with state funds under the Accessibility and Improvement Program, once the grant amount, and then the library building is determined to no longer be usable for the purposes for which money was appropriated to it, and the building is sold, once the grant amount is repaid to the state, the local government that owns the property can keep all of the rest of the proceeds. This is different from how the statute currently works for sale of state bond finance property. Currently, if a building is determined no longer needed, there's a fair market sale, the commissioners all sign off on it, the net proceeds have a hierarchy for distribution. And first, the state grant is repaid. Second, all of the rest of the outstanding debt, public and private, is repaid. Third, anybody else who contributed money to the project gets their money back. And this was a change that was added, I think, in 2007 in the debate over buildings like the Guthrie, where there's substantial contribution from non-governmental entities. And then finally, if there's still any excess in the of money remaining after the sale, it's shared among everybody who's contributed, the state and all the other contributors, the local government and all the contributors, based on their original proportionate contribution. In other words, everybody gets to have a proportionate share in the appreciated value of the property. And then there's a provision in statute that says that the share contributed by the, for example, the library entity is the amount, the fair market value of the property at the time the project began, when the improvements were began. So the bill is specific to the accessibility and improvement program for libraries, and it's saying that once the state grant is repaid, all of the other money is with the unit of government, and the property is no longer considered state bond finance property. The term that bond counsel and the AG's office, the Attorney General, talk about is the property's cleansed. And state bond finance property has the fact that it is state bond finance property recorded in the title. So it would remove that from the title, and then the money stays with the entity. They can put it into another library. They can use it for any other purpose. But it doesn't mean that that next building the money goes into is state bond finance property.
And Representative House has a question so far to this testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Dyson, I think I understand what you said, but I would give you a different example just slightly. What if the state gave the city of Pine River a building, and they got bonding money to remodel the building or create a library, and then in time this happened? Would not the state want full payment for the land if they sold it to a private party rather than another government agency?
Ms. Dyson.
Madam Chair and Representative Howes, I'm not sure I'm tracking. This bill would not affect that example, I think, because it's not part of the Library Accessibility and Improvement Program. If it is, this bill would apply if it was an accessibility grant. The grants that go through this accessibility program are typically very small grants. They've been expanded once the statute was amended to allow it to be improvements to libraries as opposed to just accessibility improvements. I think there were some larger grant amounts made, but not many. But I'm still not clear how this would apply to what your question is with regard to the land.
And Representative Howes.
Well, you may have inadvertently answered my question. If a local unit of government were given property or exchanged property with the state of Minnesota, maybe they got it for a dollar, okay? And it also happened to be later they used this grant formula to do something as a library. Okay, now this grant and your bill would work fine, but wouldn't we still have the issue that building was given to the local unit of government for a dollar, and now if they sell the building also, they can't keep that money if they sell it to a private entity. They could, and even if they sold it probably to another local unit of government, would not the state have to get that money, or won't this even affect that if it was formerly state property?
Ms. Dyson.
Madam Chair and Representative Howes, I think it depends on what the property was. If the land given to the unit of government is state bond finance property, then you're in that cycle with that land. But the whole thing about, once you make this determination that property is no longer needed for the purposes for which bond funds were appropriated, and you go through the sale process, you're taking it out of state bond financing restrictions. The distribution of the sale proceeds by repaying the state the grant amount of state bond finance or state bond proceeds, you're cleaning it up and you're taking it out of that. So if the state gave the local unit of government the land,
for a dollar. You know, I'm having a hard time with it because okay, and you know, need to know
Madam
the
Chair,
details
I'll talk
to
her about that later.
I think we need to know the details of the transaction.
And yeah. Somebody else just came to the table and maybe has an answer in this regard. So would you identify yourself for the tape, please?
Madam Chair, representatives, my name is Suzanne Miller. I'm state librarian. We're part of the Department of Education, and we actually administer this program. The purchase of land is not part of this program at all. It is not acceptable, so the land acquisition or trade would not be affected by this, and it would not be affected by any language here.
Thank you for that. And Representative Hollis, does that answer your question? And maybe you'll work with
Ms.
Dyson.
And I will talk later.
Very good. We have a question from Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, that even confused me more. You said the land, purchase of the land, and right in it says used to acquire the property, which would seem to mean purchasing land. That's my first question, and not the one I originally had.
Ms. Miller.
Representative, Madam Chair, there may be a conflict in this, but at this time, the Accessibility and Construction Act does not provide for the purchase of the land. The land must be under the prior ownership of the public entity before we administer the grant or we let the grant.
And Representative Mullen.
Madam Chair, it says right on line 114, acquired property, but going on, that can be hopefully cleared up later since that's a conflict to what you're saying. The second question is why, I guess if we're helping, somebody comes in and, let's say my government wants help with a library. So they come in and ask the state to help build the library. Then 10 years from now, they decide they're looking for money. And that property where the library is next to a new mall or something that wants to expand. So they decide to sell it. Now, this says we get back the state bond proceeds, but we're also paying, in essence, interest on the money. It's like that. What we're doing on the bonds, and we're not getting that money back either. So why are we not getting that money back?
So we have a new testifier. Would you state your name for the record?
My name is Susan Dennis. I'm the director of the Branches of the Library, and I'm the person that's bringing forward this issue. And if you'll bear with me for a minute or two, I just want to say a few things and give you a specific example where this happened. First, I want to say the State Library Construction Grant Program is a great program. It allows libraries to innovate. It allows them to wire their buildings for technology. It provides opportunities for us to make old buildings handicapped accessible. It allows us to automate. And so this is a terrific, terrific program that the state provides. And they do it for a reason. By providing a small amount of money statewide for what is a locally governed entity, you've been able to create a collaboration level across the state of Minnesota in libraries that's really unseen many places. We have locally funded organizations operating in a statewide way. It's a great program. The thing that I've struggled with is when you apply for this grant, what you're not doing is getting a grant. What you're doing is selling a portion of that local property into perpetuity to the state of Minnesota. And what it does is it creates all sorts of complications as we try to change and innovate in the future around these particular buildings. And I'm particularly concerned over the next 2 years where there's going to be a lot of cuts to libraries and other local units of government, that it's going to create huge barriers to making the kinds of changes we need. Now I'll go to my specific example, which started in 2003. We had an 8,000 square foot library in North St. Paul. It was a really old building, and circulation was going down, down, down. We met with the city of North St. Paul and decided on a collaborative project where we would sell the old building, take 100% of the proceeds, and put it in conjunction in a multi-use facility with a city community center. The 100% of the proceeds go into the community center, We're operating now at one-third the operating costs that we were before. Our circulation is far above the old library, and we're doing it in about a third the square feet that we had in the old library. This has been a win-win all the way around. But in the process of selling the building, what occurred is we found out that at one point we had gotten a library accessibility grant to put in a water fountain for people in wheelchairs. And rather than paying back that grant amount, we had to actually pay double the amount back to the state of Minnesota. Because in part the language not only said that you have to pay back the original grant amount, but the state owns a percent share of your building. So they determined that the state owned 1.62% of the North St. Paul facility. The hard part for me right now as a leader of libraries, what I'm trying to do is really focus on our infrastructure and change it. And I'm going to McKinney Commissioner saying, this is the greatest program on earth. We need to be applying for it. And they're saying, you know, there are strings attached to this. This permanent ownership piece with the state is so complicated. We're not sure we even want you to apply. And I find that to be...
Tell them how much you had to retain.
$22,000. And we, our original grant was for $11,000. Now, right now, these grants are going from $3,000 at the low end to about $500,000. I'm particularly worried about small rural communities that may actually get a large grant. I have to say, this is, we don't want to sell libraries 10 years later, but this applies 50 years later. This applies 100 years later.
Mm-hmm.
The building could be worth almost nothing, and we have to pay back the library construction grant first and foremost. The only thing I'm really looking for, and I'm not sure that you did, if
I know, we're struggling with the language yet.
Is I was hoping that there would be a time limitation on these grants. So I understand the life of the building, the life of the bonds, some time limit that we really have a responsibility back to the taxpayer. Totally willing to do that, but it seems that perpetuity is longer than that.
And Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with some of what you're trying to do. I just, I don't think we should be forgiving the money we're putting in some of the circumstances, at least, that this could be used for. And not just the money we're putting in, but the money that we're putting in is what, in essence, is interest by paying the bond premiums all the time.
And we have another question from Representative Junkie.
Since we're talking conceptual stuff, let me give you another example that actually Representative Leader's familiar with because it came through his committee last year. Similar things happen in other government areas where we invest, and one of them is airports. Every dollar, every dime that we put into a municipal airport across the state over X number of years, and I use the example of Wilmer where we built a new airport, we had put a total of $700,000 or $800,000 from the state into airport improvements since the 1940s in the state. Unbeknownst to me, when that we relocated the airport and built a new airport 2 miles west of town. And so unbeknownst to me and the city, all of a sudden, once we abandoned the airport and started the new one, the state sent us a bill. Said, we want, you know, $800,000. And we said, oh, wait a minute, hang tight here. Let's not get excited and write any checks yet. And what we came up with, and I guess when I rationalized it with MnDOT Aeronautics and others, what we created was what I call basically an airport rollover fund. As long as you're rolling it over and utilizing those dollars for the same amount, so that the $800,000 was still there in value, but we required the city then to invest that $800,000 into the new airport for improvement. So to me, that would work with the libraries, too. If you owe $22,000, instead of paying it to the state, because we gave that money originally for library use, if you would roll it over into your new library and utilize those funds to purchase improvements for the new library, to me, that would make a better sense of a way to sort these things out. And it happens in other agencies, too. Like I say, the aeronautics and non-hearing libraries. I wonder if there's even other examples out there. But I think that rollover count, as long as the money is still being utilized for the intended purpose, Now, if it was sold, that's a different deal to a private entity, like Representative Mulry's saying. But as long as it's similar use, and in your case it is,
it was.
We would just require you to use that original investment again, but you'd have to pay for it because it's our ownership, but use it into the next library.
Ms. Dyson.
Madam Chair and Representative Junkie, that's certainly an option. I think there are considerations in that when you're talking about state bond funds, and I don't know if the airport example includes state bond money. But if you're talking about state bond money, when you create that kind of rollover so that it goes back into the next building, that building or any other buildings you put the bond proceeds, the sale proceeds into, become state bond finance property again. There is a certain administrative issue about how you make sure that the title is reflects that, the title on the property. It may be the right way to go. But I think it is something to think through about how could you implement it,
right,
both administratively and whether or not it's a good idea for that community, for a community to commit that property as opposed to just getting the money and being able to buy the, the difference is that if you roll it over, you get all of it, including the grant amount, and you get to use that as well. If you pay back the grant amount, you now are free and clear of the state bond fund issues.
Right.
The other option that, again, there's a timing issue, there's timing considerations is for any particular project, there may be opportunities for the legislature to enact a rider in a bill that says, notwithstanding this, this money is rolled over for this project.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are different ways to address it depending on the situation.
And Madam Chair, the airport fund is not bonding. It's fees on its license fees and gas fees and other things that are collected and then put into a fund. So it's basically a cash fund.
Representative Hausman. One of the things I might add, we are a bit unique. I've checked in talking to the State Department. Other states which have the same program say it's just for the life of the bonds, that when the bonds are paid for, then they're released from that requirement. But Ms. Dyson points out that in our case, we have a constitutional issue. I mean, we can't do what some other states do because of our constitutional requirements. So it's not quite so easy. The reason we initially approached this from a broader perspective is the conversation we had here is, even if your city just used dollars for preliminary engineering and then never went any further with the project, the state would have an interest in that property. In this case, I think you feel that libraries don't often know when they've applied for that grant that they're caught in this bigger issue. And so maybe part of this is just raising this issue and as part of that library grant program that we just that we communicate at the early end.
We have a question to this point for Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Dyson, who has jurisdiction from the state oversight on the bonds that are let? Is it Department of Administration, Department of Revenue? I'll let you...
Ms. Dyson.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, for the debt management, Commissioner Cardell and the Department of Finance, Minnesota Management and Budget, for the legal opinions on the market, on the tax status of the bonds and the legality of the issuance of the bonds, the Attorney General and Bond Counsel hired, which is Len Rice at Dorkin. They're the ones who review the bond sale statement and the laws authorizing the issuance of bonds to determine their tax status and legality.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Dyson, we would have to, from a legislative standpoint, pass legislation to do something, as Representative Junkie was just saying, to have this rollover happen, or can we give jurisdiction to the department administration to give them authority to roll it over or make this happen.
Ms. Dyson. Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, legislation would be needed to make changes to how the sale of bond sale, bond finance property is handled.
Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, I've got a question either of Ms. Ennis, but she's some of the research at CAF. This is applying to the libraries, but I'm recalling a number of years ago where we had a rather hot debate involving land that had been purchased by a local intermediate school district. They managed the tech colleges for a third campus. And then they decided to not develop the third campus, and they were going to sell the land. And the land had appreciated in value quite significantly over the years in Western Hennepin County. And there was a rather hot debate, and quite frankly, HALT had one position and Senate had another position on where those proceeds were to go at the time. My question is, do we have in statute today, that was a number of years ago, how that land or those proceeds would be distributed if it's another entity? So this is referencing libraries only, and that's why I'm with your research. By the way, she's a former HALT fiscal analyst. Been involved in my reference point to, with the.
Maybe she remembers.
Yes. So who wants to tackle that? Ms. Dyson?
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, 16A.695, which is the general statute that governs what happens to the proceeds of the sale of state bond finance property when it's no longer needed. And it was originally enacted in 1994. It was modified in 2007 to take into account contributions of non-governmental entities. But that statute is the general one that applies and that caught the libraries because the policy in that law says that appreciated value of the property is shared. The state gets to share in the appreciation as well as the other, anybody else contributing it to the property. But in your specific instance, you're talking about tech colleges, they've been merged with NINSCU, and that's a whole area I don't know about, and I'd have to look into the history of that because I just don't know.
And Representative Carlson?
Prior to merger, but it just put that whole question of how the proceeds would be distributed on the table. And quite frankly, the HALT position was with the school district at the time, the tenant position was that the state had the fight, if you will, to recapture the funds. The local school district had, I think we had a formula of 85-15 or 80-20 that had varied through the years. And so it was quite a debate in terms of how that would be distributed. My question was if we've got something that clarifies that, that just the bill clarifies how that's going to happen.
And is there anyone in the audience who had something that would clarify that? No. Okay. Next question is from Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to go back to Mr. Mullery's statement about the interest. And we have to pay interest on these things in addition to the initial fountain. Then are we paying the interest at what it was when the bond was issued, or are we paying interest of the going rate today?
Ms. Nemeth?
The way it was calculated, Ms. Murphy, is they looked at the assessed value of the property, and so it was how much the value of the property had increased in the past.
And the property,
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, and the property that we're talking about was not the old library, not the library you moved out of, but the library that you moved into.
Ms. Nemeth.
At a third of the cost.
It was actually the old library.
The old library.
So what they did is they calculated their percent share at the time they made the investment and then applied that to the assessed value. And as property increased,
and their assessed value goes up, the state share stays constant, but their dollar value may grow as the investment grows.
Representative Murphy, any further questions?
And yes, Madam Chair, Ms. Nimitz. So how much was the fountain originally?
$11,000.
Ms. Nimitz.
Representative Murphy.
And how much was the fountain in your new building?
Ms. Nimitz.
This fountain will be, the city of Mercy will actually pay for the drinking fountain in the new building, so I do not.
And we have another question from Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, just kind of curious: does the state appear on the title? Then is that the way? Is that the way that the that's how it's tracked? So when it's told that when it's sold, then the state is notified of the sale, and then they can follow up on their interest. And then and it's, on the title it says that there is a certain percent owner.
And everyone is shaking their head yes, but is there a certain percent? Ms. Dyson, do you...
Madam Chair, Representative Eastland, I don't think that the title talks about a share of ownership. The ownership interest is part of the title. That it's recorded that it's state-sponsored finance property. But apart from that, I don't think there's any other information, but I don't know that as fact.
And Ms. Nimitz?
Representative, what I have is a series of memos between Peter Stoughton and the library's attorney where they argue about the share. And it was determined by Peter Stoughton.
So, Madam Chair.
Mr. Representative Eastland, did you have another question?
Yeah. So there is no official document any place that actually describes that relationship in a percent. That's just something that is determined after the fact based on some records going back to the bonding interest.
Ms. Nimitz.
That is my understanding.
Ms. Dyson?
Madam Chair, Representative Eastland, there is a grant agreement when bonds are put into a project, so that would reflect what the original dollar amount was, and the statute lays out the allocation of the proceeds of the sale, and it's the fourth level down in the hierarchy that says everybody shares proportionately to the any excess, any appreciated value. So you'd know what the grant amount is, and you know what the market or the sale price is, and you know, hopefully, how much anybody else put into it.
And I've been informed that the Senate passed this bill in 5 minutes, so I don't know what that means. But we do have another question from Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and that just proves they don't know what they're doing most of the time. What I was talking about was not the interest or percentage of interest in the property. I was talking about, in essence, what interest on the amount paid. And while $11,000 was the actual figure for the money used, what did we actually pay as a total to the bondholders? That was obviously more than that.
Representative, I do not know the answer of that. And I think that is a fair piece of analysis in the situation. I think the libraries have no interest in any way taking money from bondholders. And I realize that the state pays significantly more in the sale of the bonds for that project than what actually came out particularly in one line item of a project. But it would be nice to have that calculated and estimated and through the life of the bonds or through some time period.
And we have a question from Representative Carlson.
I just have time, so I'll call it just Representative Eastland. I used that knowledge for example. A big part of that debate was the school district had titles to the property. Mm-hmm. And there had been a formula to pay off those state bonds, mm-hmm. but they had title and home. Who got the, and they were dependent on capital improvement. They gained on the campus, but they were, they had been built, they were operating. So, hence the debate, the school district could keep the money, because they had titles of land to improve their campus or not. And that's where the debate and consciousness took place with the tenant having a tenant position that was. Kind of position, and I was just dealing with the title of that. But My only point is that it's good to get this clarified so that we can't know what the rules are and how that would be kind of a
Representative Junkie.
Well, I just want to point out Representative Moley is correct, and if you're really interested in protecting state investment, you wouldn't do anything with the value of the property. You'd look at the original value of the bond plus the interest paid over X number of years. That's the state's interest, because the property value can go up beyond that, or frankly, it can go the other way too. And that in no way protects state interest at that point in time. So I think Representative Mulley's right. If you really want to be clear on what we're doing for into the future, you want to figure out how to protect the state interest, which would be original bond plus interest paid. That's what we paid out, and that's what would be due upon sale or rolled over into the next project or however we go about it in a mechanism.
Representative Mahoney.
I understand, Madam Chair and Madam Chair, I understand the idea of protecting the state's interest, but, you know, frankly, I take the witness's position here. At some point, we've got to let go of this or somehow or another allow this to move on into other commerce, because I got to bet between the lawyer and the state official, they spent more than $22,000 just sending emails back and forth. So it becomes a little bit of the tail chasing the dog, and or the dog chasing the tail. And I think the Senate probably had it right passing this in 5 minutes.
Any comments?
It is why we focus for purposes of this discussion on just the library facilities grants, because of their size. That if you think about the complexity of this. But we thank you for, I don't know if there are other questions yet, but we thank you for your indulgence. The Senate has some language in. I think we've had lots of discussion, and I don't know that we've arrived at an understanding yet, but we thought at the very least, because there is language moving forward, that this committee should wrestle with the issue.
And wrestle we did, and I don't see any further comments. And I see one, Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, how soon do you think that maybe you're going to bring this before the Cultural and Outdoor Resources Committee?
Maybe I'll do that Monday night. I hear they don't have a very long agenda on Monday night.
And Chair Rep. Housen, it would be better on a Wednesday when we do libraries again.
Thank you. And we'll hold this over for possible inclusion in the capital investment bill. Thank you. So the next item on the agenda is discussion of design and pre-design for DNR capital projects. And we have with us here today Kath Uska, facilities manager of the DNR. And she was at my committee at 8:30 this morning, and here we are again, and welcome. So maybe you'd give your name for the record.
I'd be happy to do that. My name is Kath Uska. I'm the facility manager for the Department of Natural Resources, and I'm here again. I believe the topic of discussion is design and pre-design for capital projects. I expect to be more answering questions than providing any presentations, but I will say that I understand that there's been interest in having certain shovel-ready projects. One of the questions that has come up that I have heard is that, look at higher ed, they tend to come to us with shovel-ready projects. DNR, could you do that also? Given the two-year bonding cycle, asking for pre-design and design for large dollar amount projects is absolutely perfect, and DNR also does that when we have projects, large dollar amount projects. However, most of DNR projects tend to be smaller projects, frankly under $500,000. And so to ask for design in one bonding year and then do the design, which is probably a 6 to 9 months design, put the project on the shelf, and then wait for another 15 months to get construction money, doesn't particularly help us. We typically, with the money we got, I think we will have over 70% of the money that we got in last year's bonding spent by the middle of this coming summer. Because typically what we do is that first year we do design, we do a lot of survey in the fall, we do a lot of water permits. Certainly the mission of the Department of Natural Resources, part of it is to protect the natural resources. So if we're doing a trail, for example, one of the things we do before we locate that trail is we make sure we aren't tromping on, and I'm not a biologist, I'm not saying the right words, but some precious native plant that only exists in this one spot. And we also are then trying to balance that with making sure we have resources that are available for the public to use with good views and that sort of thing. We also have land that has a lot of archaeology on it. And so we typically have an archaeologist look where we're putting a trail to make sure, again, that we are protecting that resource also.
And Representative Hansen, did you have anything to add in this regard related to the issue?
Well, I think we've heard here and we've heard in other committees, do you have any statutory impediments that slow down the process where you're treated differently than other agencies? Let's say if we authorize a project and you can't start that project until we've authorized it, or I think we're getting some different, or at least maybe I'm hearing it differently on process for some of these projects. I mean, is there anything in statute that is limiting you on the ability to move ahead like other agencies or faster than you could now?
Ms. Oska.
Madam Chair, I'm Representative Hansen. In general, there are a couple of statutes that, for example, 15B33 with the Designer Selection Board. The limit has been raised several times. Currently, if you've got project valued at $2 million or more, you have to go through the State Designer Selection Board. DNR doesn't have projects of that magnitude very often. Certainly $2 million, as nice as it sounds, doesn't get the same thing as $2 million did a while ago. And so there will be more projects at that level going through the Designer Selection Board. Again, at the moment, I don't have any projects, but it's certainly conceivable that in a couple of years I will. And to have that limit raised would allow us to move a little faster on some of those projects.
Representative Hansen, follow up.
Is that the only statutory impediment you have, or
Ms. Oska?
And Chair Representative Hansen, I think that that would be probably the main thing that I can think of. We've looked at language in 16B.30, which indicates that if you're going to be spending operating dollars other than for code violations or asset preservation, that would materially increase the size of a facility, the footprint, square foot. You'd need to get approval of the board of the legislature before you start any work on that. I think that it may be that there's a question, could we actually do a little design? I think the exact language is in it. 16B.30, unless the commissioner determines that an urgency exists, the commissioner of an agency undertaking a project with a cost in excess of $50,000 shall notify the chairs. We talked a little bit about that internally, and I think there's enough, what does undertake a project with a cost? Could we actually do some design, then go to the legislature for construction dollars? Subsequent to our internal discussion, I think we decided that there's enough language here that it doesn't impede us from moving.
Representative Hansen.
And, a couple weeks ago, Commissioner Meyer handed out the list, and I think you were here as well, of the bonding projects that we authorized last year, and a number of those were unobligated, that the project had not started. And we saw other projects and other agencies that were completed. I'm thinking just particularly in my district, I know there's a trail project that's done versus a trail project that may not have been started. And so this goes back to the question then of why. Why those projects that we offered last year didn't get done. I thought what we heard was that there were some limits on what you could do, that you had to wait until the design, until the authorization or the bill was signed before you could start on the design or pre-design. But am I, you're saying now there's not a, I'm just confused here on what's happening with this delay.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, I'm not sure that I was here with that testimony, but I can tell you specifically in terms of trails, an interesting discussion, probably more than you want to know, but what happens with the trail is we may not always have the land, so there's an acquisition piece for a trail. There is also, we again have to, so that has kept us moving forward on several projects for which we got trail money last time. There's also a couple-step process with the trail. The first thing you do is you do a survey of the land, and you have to do both a horizontal survey as well as a vertical survey, because we need to have safety standards in terms of the slope. You also have certain standards if you're making that trail handicap accessible. So you have to balance that with the nature you're going to. Last summer, we held up a project at Gooseberry State Park in the Gypsy Gammy Trail because we came around a corner and there was a woodpecker, an affiliated woodpecker nest. And so we waited till the affiliated woodpecker babies left before we worked on that part of the trail. So we have to do that first. But what we do is we first have to shoot elevation, and we have to shoot a certain time period you can do that and not do that. You get in and do that. Then that tells you where you need to have the easement. And then I know on the Curling Trail, we're looking at trying to get the trail by the lake, but then what does that mean in terms of archaeology and where it's a natural resource? So it's gone back and forth. So we also have water permits. There are certain times of the year we can work on Lake Superior. So we've got some piers and fishing piers and safe harbor, different things. We've got constraints on when we can work on that. We also have stormwater permits and water permits because, again, we need to preserve it. So there are a whole series of things. I don't believe we are holding up any projects just because we aren't designing them.
Representative Hansen.
So for smaller deferred maintenance projects, going back to the other committee this morning, there shouldn't be any reason that, I mean, those should be able to go in the ground, those should be able to be bid, and those should be able to be having people working and fixing those. If we passed the bill that included that this spring, that work should be done this summer and not next spring. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, that is acceptable.
And we have a question from Representative House.
Madam Chair, and just to reiterate our concern, I mean, we really think bonding projects can put people to work, and particularly that whole array of DNR projects, we assume put people to work fairly quickly. As we heard all the agencies come forward, I think we were generally satisfied that as bonding authority is there, projects happen. But that day, I think all of us were shocked. I wish I had the sheet in front of me, but the first portion, the flood hazard mitigation grants, had all been expended. I mean, there was maybe $1 million there, but they knew what was going to happen. And then all the rest of it, and what are the subjects? Conservation, parks and trails, and safety, and everything had massive amounts of work not yet done. And we pushed MinSCU when it looked like they weren't getting their projects done. In 2 weeks, they came back with a more aggressive schedule that showed how quickly they could do these. And so we're looking for a reason here. And that day, the comparison Mr. Myers made was with MnDOT. We can't do what MnDOT does. We can't start designing our projects before. That's what he gave as the reason. And so we said, do we need to do legislation for that? Will you work on something? And we had the impression that, yes, that was possible and forthcoming. So we're just not wanting to go through this because, first of all, we're not motivated to bond anymore if there's all that unspent bonding authority. But because they're all projects near and dear to us, we'd rather see them done.
So that's the reason for this conversation about it, all that unspent bonding authority and some signals that seem to suggest you can't do what others do. Ms. Oska.
Madam Chair and Madam Chair. I believe that part of that may be that we start work when the bond in May, when the bill passes and the governor has signed the bill, whatever is in the bill, we start. However, DNR is a little bit unique from other state agencies in that we do the design in-house, so that we are not encumbering large amounts of money to a design consultant. We are working that in-house. So we've got a number of projects that are ready to go out to bid, but you don't see that on the spreadsheet because the fact that we have not encumbered money for a design consultant. We've been doing that work in-house. So that may be why some of it looks like it's not spent. I'd be happy to talk with Assistant Commissioner Meyer and understand what the difference was. Because again, we typically get the money we get in a bonding year, that first summer, like summer of 2008 we spent in fall designing. Now we've got a bunch of projects that are ready to move forward here this next year.
And Madam Chair, as I recall, there was 2005 unspent, there was 2006 unspent, and virtually everything about 2008 was unspent. That was what was startling for us.
Yes, and I remember that day. We couldn't believe that we had all this money that we couldn't spend and get the projects done. And that's why we initiated this conversation, I believe. Ms. Oska.
Madam Chair and Representative, I would have to look at the list to be able to comment on that. I know that funds that I particularly manage, my staff manages directly, is for some field office renovations. And one of the things that we are looking at doing is trying to save money by doing some consolidation. An example of that is in Bemidji, where we've got three different sites plus a rental or a lease facility. It's, does the public know where to go? We'd be better off trying to consolidate. So I'm looking at that money to take the next step and want to use it the most wise position. I'd be happy to take a look at some of the other things and come back with some more specific. It's hard without knowing which of the projects involved have some more specific comments that I could
make. Right. And that, I think that would be helpful. And Representative Hansen, did you have another comment?
Final comment. Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe it's late in the day, but I think I just heard you say that you had to wait until the bonding bill was passed because you've got the internal... You got your internal engineering staff, so that does line up with what Mr. Meyer told us. So then my question again is, because you've got state employees that are doing the engineering, which I understand the comment of that can help save cost. Is there something there where there's a statutory prohibition that prevents those same people from working on that design before the bill is passed?
Ms. Oska.
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe that all agencies, through ACTR and abroad, do not start design on a project until the bonds have, the bill has passed and the governor has authorized those projects. I believe we're prohibited to do that by language. I think what you're seeing with some of the higher ed particularly and some of the state agencies that have larger projects is they have come before you 2 years before and asked for design and construction money. So, which makes sense, again, on larger projects. It takes 2 years to do design and construction. Then what you're seeing is they're coming forward and they're ready to bid. So the money that you gave them in 2008, they were ready to sign a construction contract, whereas with DNR smaller projects, we are doing our projects, we get the money, we do the design right then, and the construction in the following year. So you are seeing the following year coming up for 2008 bonded dollars.
Representative Wagenius.
Let me tell you how I think I'm hearing this issue.
that you don't design until the project is ready to go. And so it seems to me that we have to set aside some money for design for things that are likely to go in the next cycle. I think one of the problems here is I think last year was the first time that we pushed very hard to say, what is your plan over 10 years? List those projects, list them in order of the needing to be done. My sense is things before that were done in a more ad hoc fashion, perhaps a more political fashion of, you know, who wants to get things done in their district, and that we pushed with the chair's help for a more systematic 10-year plan. And I think that was the first time we ever heard that. And I think that is what I am feeling right now, and that we need to take a responsibility as the committee to say, okay, we're going to have a certain amount of money set aside in our regular funding bill or in our bill, in the bonding bill, to do some of this pre-design and design so things are ready to go. Am I correct about that?
Ms. Hauske.
Madam Chair, Representative, certainly if we get design money, we will proceed on those designs, and then the following next bonding cycle ask for construction dollars.
And Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did just get the sheet, and just to give you one example, under outdoor recreation, the 2006 authorized appropriations were almost 33 million, and unobligated is over 15 million. So almost half we're in 2009, and I think that wouldn't even address what I'm hearing from Representative Virginia. So
Any comment, Ms. Oska?
Madam Chair and Representative, again, I'd be happy to look at it. I don't know what that is. If there's acquisition in there, which certainly does sometimes cause us some issues. I know we had a problem with the Gidgigami Trail up at Silver Bay going through North Shore Mine, and we've been in discussions with them for 5 or 6 years on that. Trail alignment within there. So I'd be happy to get back. I don't know.
I think that would be appropriate. If you can get something back to us and kind of let us know, or maybe come back and visit. I'm not sure how the chair would like to proceed, but we'd maybe like to wrap this up and see exactly what's happening and how we can help. So any further questions? If not, thank you for appearing before our committee and helping us with that issue. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.